Welcome to Lessons in Leadership, Steve Adubato with my colleague, Mary Gamba. We kick off the program with Sunil Dadlani, who's EVP, Chief Cyber Security Officer at Atlantic Health System, one of our healthcare underwriters. Sunil, good to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, let's get right to this. Artificial intelligence and healthcare, you say?
You know, healthcare and artificial intelligence are so really integrated. And everything is now integrated, not only healthcare, but every industry vertical. What we see right now is a global dominance race in terms of technology and AI. And that is really reshaping how the global economies are going to behave and how geopolitics is going to reshape. And that is, in fact, changing every industry vertical, and healthcare being at the epicenter of this change. And I can tell you that nobody is competing for the second position. And the competition is fierce. While the artificial intelligence, the potential is so huge and indisputable, but again, it comes with its own inherent risk. But the potential is so hard to ignore. So that is why everybody's embarking on this journey of redefining, reshaping, and reimagining the healthcare.
Jump back in, Mary.
You talk about risk, Sunil, and I, along with so many, probably the entire universe, we are so worried and concerned about our personal data, and what could be more personal than our healthcare data? Talk a little bit, what is happening in terms of cybersecurity, technology, and making sure that our medical records are safe so our information is kept private as it should be?
That's a very, you know, loaded question, and that's always on the top of the mind. For Atlantic Health System, you know, we are a mission-driven and purpose-driven organization. When I say mission-driven, it starts with patient outcome and patient safety. And these are not two different objectives or goals. This is the one goal. You know, you cannot have a best patient outcome if you don't have a patient safety. You cannot have a best patient safety if you do not have a best patient outcome. So they are so integrally connected. Second part is, you know, talking about cybersecurity and data privacy, you know, that remains always at the heart of what we do. It's not only about protecting our patient information, but it is also about our trust with the community and the patient we serve. And we take this seriously. And having seen this since year over year, healthcare is one of the top most industry that is being targeted by the cyber actors across the world. And there is a good reason for that, because right now in the gray market, the patient record is almost, maybe 100-fold more expensive or more valuable than your credit card information. But not very many people pay attention to that. And without getting into too many details about and exposing our cybersecurity posture, but again, we are doing everything humanly possible in leveraging people, process, technology, education, awareness, and building large partner ecosystem to basically build our cyber posture that is secured by design, secured by default, and secured by demand.
Everything you said, we appreciate and understand. You're doing everything you can to protect, to safeguard. But look, everyone knows, and by the way, we don't know how often it's happening, because there are some organizations that just pay the ransom to get back that information. But there's also been a whole range of public cases where there have been cyber attacks and people have accessed patient records and have accessed sensitive information. So while there's no guarantee, I don't care how good the system is, there's no guarantee that you can protect it. Do we agree so far? Or is there a system I don't know about?
Steve, you are spot on. Absolutely. You know, let me start by saying, first of all, the power of balance and the odds are always in the favor of bad players, cyber actors, because they have to be right only once and we have to be right billions of times. It's not the question of if, and it's the question of when. And I really want to double down on what you just said. I think there are two kinds of organizations that are existing. One, they are aware of the breach has already happened and all the information is already available on the dark web. Second, those who are not aware, but the data is already breached and their information is already on the dark web. So I don't think that there is any organization or any individual whose information is not really breached and it's not available on the dark web.
Wow. Listen, and that's doing everything you can
Yes.
to try to protect. Mary, jump back in, please.
Digital transformation is right in your title, Sunil, and I wonder where do you view technology going? It's so frustrating. Yesterday evening, I had a physical therapy appointment, and they said, "Oh, did you bring your X-ray of your neck?" And I'm like, "No, don't you have access to it?" And they're like, "Excuse me," and they said, "Oh, no, you did that over there. We don't have access." So then I'm trying to get into my portal, and so when can, should, how? Everyday human beings like myself or patients, when can we expect that there will be better communication? I know most hospital systems nowadays are using this thing called Epic for your medical records, but
Right.
when can we expect, or is it realistic to expect that pharmacies, physical therapy, physicians may be able to access one central database where all of our data is being held?
And
Loaded question,
Mary,
I know.
I'm going to complicate your question, Mary.
Yeah.
We have several healthcare partners, underwriter sponsors of our program. You compete with each other. So if Mary or I or anyone else has a procedure at one system that's competing with another, to Mary's question, why the heck can't you just get it on a common source of information, a database, please?
So again, that's a great question. And again, I will start with this that
Well, we have no answers. We just have questions. So go
and
ahead.
I will try to answer to the best of my capability and knowledge. So first and foremost, the goal for every health system and starting from Atlantic Health System is to be a connected, integrated health system. Now, that doesn't mean that integrated only within our system. You know, you as a health system, you communicate with federal agencies, state agencies, governing and compliance bodies. There are so many other third parties
Health
that you
insurance companies as
health
well, you're
insurance
communicating.
companies. So, you know, having one central database, while it will be a nirvana and it's a preferred state, but it's too difficult to achieve. And, you know, specifically by design, healthcare system is so complex and it has multiple stakeholders, so to speak. You have payers, you have pharmacy, you have patients, you
Yep.
have provider systems. And many of the times, you know, the motives or the incentives are, you know, seldom they converge because of different reasons. They have different systems, they have different formats, and sometimes it's just impossible to build one system because that will truly require not billions, but trillions of dollars to have a one unified health system in the country. It's not that easy. And we are plagued with you know, it is no secret that healthcare systems operate on a very, very low margin. And our first job is to provide the highest quality of care.
But respectfully, isn't your first job in every great healthcare system like yours and others to do what is best for the patient?
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
if sharing that information is in fact best for the patient, then what's the real motive?
No, the goal is right. But again, there are so many dependencies. Financial can be one part, technical can be a second part, operational can be third part. And then
Right.
partner ecosystem that brings all the stakeholder together is another curveball. So I'm not at all disputing that, yes, patient is at the center of our universe. That's how we are organized. And we want to achieve this goal. But again, the dependency and the complexity is so much in the healthcare. Then it's easier said than done. But what we at least are trying on our side is that at least areas where we have direct control, you know, we have 500 plus ambulatory sites, we have a lot of affiliations, we have a lot of our own eight state-of-the-art hospital systems. So at least we are trying to connect and have that integrated single view, single system, single patient view record, at least in our environment. So that
Sure.
much I can say that at least that way we are fully integrated.
Sunil, let me just say this. You do not have an easy job. You do not. But Sunil, thank you so much for joining us and trying to break through a complex set of issues that are not just technical and not just related to cybersecurity, but our healthcare and the complicated nature of it. Sunil, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Steve. And I just want to add one quick another comment
Please.
because we are non-linear thinking, the thinkers. We always don't think that, you know, if there is a problem, there is a logic, why don't you do it? Non-linear thinking is all about exploring different options. And one way, when you and Mary brought up the issue of a single record, maybe sometimes it is not a bad idea from one lens. Because if you create too much on one single system, you create a single point of failure. So if one system, which is in the entire ecosystem, gets failed, then you're compromising the whole system, whole industry. So that's again another point of view to ponder.
It's true.
More to think about. Sunil, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You got it. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Bucino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Joined by our good friend and colleague, Carlos Medina, President and CEO, Statewide Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, New Jersey. Carlos, good to see you, buddy.
Always a pleasure to see you, Steve.
Listen, before we get into leadership, can you promote Que Pasa?
Sure. I'm on season 6 of Que Pasa. It airs on Saturdays, 9 in the morning. Next episode will be a Father's Day special, and it'll be a fun episode.
Great. We also put up the website so people can find out more, and also broadcast with our partners at NJPBS. Hey, Carlos, talk to us about this. This is part of our leadership, Lessons in Leadership series. We'll also use it on one-on-one. But my question is this. You and I were doing I moderated a forum on leadership, not-for-profit leadership, that was sponsored by Horizon, big supporter of public broadcasting. You're on the board, by the way, of Horizon. And we were talking a lot about leadership challenges. Your leadership journey, pretty unique. Describe it.
Sure. I was somebody who grew up with a very strict father, so I'm sure you could appreciate that.
Just a little
So
bit.
going to law school was not an option in my house. I was going to law school. And it was a struggle. I was shy. I wasn't a public speaker like I've been forced to be now. I still get nervous getting in front of folks. But dad was very aggressive. And then fast forward to the chamber being in crisis, I was an attorney working at an engineering firm, and we were $300,000 in the hole. Our founder became ill, and somebody had to step forward. And I sat with dad, and dad was like, you know, I think it's a good thing to do, but, you know, sit with your family, let them know the additional hours you're going to be working. And, you know, I'm glad I did. That's probably the moment that changed my life the most, was joining the chamber, helping turn them around.
Yeah, let me follow up on that. Mary,
Yeah.
Mary will jump in a second. So without getting back on a soapbox, I was saying that when you lead an organization, particularly a nonprofit, 300 grand in the hole, right? You step in. I was saying, and I believe this, even with great partners like Mary, who's an exceptional leader, that very often leadership, when you're having to make budget, is lonely. Is that just me crying the blues, or do you think it's true?
It's true. I was picking up the phone call, you know, to call friends. I called friends from high school. And I think at some point people stopped picking up the call because it probably got around the community. Carlos is looking to save the chamber. Don't pick up. You know, hey, Sam, if he's about to call you, I'm just giving you the heads up. So it was tough. I mean, we had people leave the board when they saw the finances, which was,
Wow.
we need their time, we need their treasure, and they're taking both away and saying, we're packing up our lunchbox and going home. So that was tough. But at the end of the day, if I had to use a phrase or, it's all about relationships, Steve. That's what saved me. That's what saved the chamber. And that's always been in my life. I'm a big proponent that you need to, nurture your relationships. There's a friend of mine named Ted Rubin who says, relationships are the new currency. So instead of ROI, he likes to say ROR, return on relationship.
Yeah, your friend's a smart guy because
Yeah.
Mary and I built this organization through our relationships and also our relationships with a great team that we have. Go ahead, Mary.
It's funny you mention relationships, Carlos, with our new up-and-coming leaders, our younger 20-something leaders. Steve has sons in their 20s. I have two sons, a 20 and a 23-year-old. How do you recommend to these young leaders up-and-coming to build relationships when so much of what they do is just like we're doing right now on Zoom, on Teams?
Yeah.
And how do you build relationships in this and on the phone in this type of format?
I'm not shy, Mary. So, like, I have a 22-year-old daughter who you'll see on that episode. She joins me on the Father's Day episode. So, she wants to be a Broadway performer in musical theater. So, I'm
Oh
just
my
like, go
Carlos,
ahead, Mary. Tell them
my
about your.
son is at NYU Tisch right now
Oh, my
studying to be an
God.
actor.
So, we have to have a coffee with the kids. Yeah, my daughter
Definitely.
graduated Marymount Manhattan
Yes.
in musical theater. So she
Congrats.
comes on the show. I've introduced her to, Mandy Gonzalez from Broadway, Christopher Jackson. So she's met some really great people. So it's just, I'm aggressive with her. I'm like, you have to come to this cocktail party with me because you're going to meet a producer that could perhaps open a door for you. But I do struggle with the 20-something-year-olds are so different than the three of us that are on camera right now. I mean, it's such a different world. They don't build relationships. It's all digital. So I think there's a big disconnect in that generation. But those that can embrace it are gonna, there's no stopping them. Like Steve's kids, automatically having Steve as a dad, they're gonna have networks. They're gonna know how to network now.
Or they don't want their dad getting involved.
And my wife Jennifer watches occasionally. Jen, I know you accuse me of trying to micromanage our kids' lives, which is a euphemism for Nick, Chris, Olivia, my older son Stephen. Here's what you need to do. You need to call so and so. No, I'm going to text them. No, you need to call so and so and have a real conversation. They don't know what they don't know. And I know they push back. But Carlos, this is a leadership and parenting question. Do we let them fail or fall, however it's going to play out, even when we know that they need to do this thing? We're not trying to control them, but help them understand that it isn't all digital. And texting is not talking. Go
I
ahead,
think we
Carlos.
have to let them have little stumbles, Steve, not a long fall from a high building, but I think occasionally you have to let them. My daughter is my personality, so she's so stubborn that if I tell her, I think automatically she already has an inclination to say no just because it's coming out of my mouth. So I have to let her organically come to the same conclusion by supporting her as best I can. But yeah, it's a challenge.
Mary, we should just do a series on parenting, which is, Mary, it is a form of leadership.
It is. And I have, Carlos, I've said to Steve a million times, I said, you need to let them fail. If you always are there to catch them, as long as it's nothing ethical, immoral, illegal, dangerous, let them fail because if not, they're not going to learn if you're always there to just scoop them right up.
All right, so we're stop talking about my issues with my kids. All right, here we go. Carlos, quick follow-up. Board leadership, as I said, you're on the board of Horizon, but also on New Jersey Transit. What the heck are you doing on the board of New Jersey Transit?
I got off there in January.
Oh,
My
yeah.
term
Okay.
ended.
Strategic decision making. Quick question on this. Board leadership and executive staff-oriented leadership, biggest difference?
Board leadership is more about long-term strategy, not getting in the weeds. And obviously, in management, you have to execute that vision. But that's sometimes where the conflict could exist, where a board member wants to direct staff, even in nonprofits. I deal with that on my team. So it's keeping those lanes differentiated and make sure everybody stays in their lane for the good of the organization.
Yeah. And by the way, New Jersey Transit is a lesson in leadership in and of itself, trying to understand why it works the way it does.
You know, being that I live behind the curtain or peek behind the curtain, Steve, they're a very strong organization. It's just, how can you run an organization that it costs you $1.25 to bring you to New York, but you charge the consumer a dollar? It's like they're just not charging enough. And I know that's a pain point and people complain, but their expenses have generally been greater, you know, than the revenue. So having 10 years without even a 1% increase hurt the organization.
I also know Governor Murphy said he will fix New Jersey Transit if it kills him, and he's leaving office pretty soon, and he looks pretty healthy to me. Mary, last question.
Carlos, I did read in a lot. We do our research before these shows, and you are a self-professed storyteller. Where did your passion come from? I mean, we just saw it now for the past 9-10 minutes. Where does your passion for storytelling, because at the way beginning of this segment, you shared that you get nervous sometimes with public speaking, but you're also a storyteller. Where does that connection come from?
Yeah, it's a weird conflict that I experienced. Dad was an amazing storyteller to the point that as he was getting older and his memory was failing, some people might, like in a party, come and say, save me, your dad's told me the story 100 times. So I then become a little nervous. I'm conscious, like, be careful, Carlos, you don't want to be. So then I kind of become more, you know, retrospective. I become a little more inward and I'm not as aggressive because I'm like, wait, I don't want to be harassing folks. But I love storytelling. I loved hearing Dad's stories and the way, you know, he could command the crowd and people would just circle him and appreciate his knowledge. It was always, it's just the rush that I can't explain when you have a good conversation with somebody.
Hey, Carlos, you're doing important work at the Chamber, the statewide Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and also with KPASA, New Jersey, seen with our great friends and broadcast partners, NJPBS, and go online. It'll be up one more time so people to see past episodes. Carlos, wishing you and your team all the best. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
You got to stay with us. We'll be right back. Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media. All right, a couple minutes left. You know, I'm a Knicks fan, New York Knicks fan. Season has ended. We're taping this on the 5th of June, on the 3rd or 4th of June, back page of the New York Post. Yes, I still read newspapers every day. Coach of the Knicks, gone. Coach Thibodeau, Tom Thibodeau, a leader. They won 50 games in a row in an 82-game season, 2 years in a row. They made it to the conference finals. They lost. They're not going to, they didn't go to the NBA championship. There's an NBA champion, but I don't really care. After my team's out, I don't really care. That's not the issue. Hey, Mary. They thought it was time for a different kind of coach. Coach Thibodeau was old school, 90s oriented coach, meaning he coached the way he wanted to coach, discipline, hard work, and didn't clearly jibe with the fact that the players had more of a voice than ever before, and you had to make your players happy. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't particularly concerned about making them happy. He was simply concerned about winning games, and his time ran out. Even if you win over a period of time, Mary, if you don't change your tune, are you out?
You are out. And
Frank
in this
Brown,
case...
Frank Brown, the basketball...
Yeah, bring Frank Brown in while I give...
He's a
I'll give my my minute on this. So,
less than a minute. Go ahead, go.
yeah, less than a minute. Don't worry. I'm not a, but let me just put it out there. I'm not a basketball fan. The
Not
squeakiness,
about basketball.
not about basketball. But in this situation, if a leader has been doing it, and just because he won for however many 23 some odd championships, however many it was, doesn't mean that if you are now losing because your approach, if you don't change your approach to adapt, pivot to a new generation in the way that people are learning, are taking coaching, you then don't deserve to stay in that spot.
Got it.
Sometimes I read in one article, it said sometimes the simplest choice is the right choice. And in this one, if the coach isn't bringing your team to victory anymore, it's time for a change.
Frank, to be clear, they won a lot. They won a whole lot. They just didn't win the big one. So go ahead, Frank.
A real leader creates change. The Knicks had been losing for many years. This man brought them almost to the champ,
The
like
promised land of basketball.
Almost.
How you get rid of him because they did not actually win after having so many years of horrible, horrible defeats is just outlandish. That's not the leaders, the bad leadership is in the front office who decided to get rid of him.
So when is it Chuck Dolan? Is that his name? Is it Dolan's name? Oh,
Yeah,
Jim Dolan.
Tim Dolan, Tim
Tim,
Dolan.
oh, that's Elvin. Can't be on camera, but he can chime in. Tim Dolan said, they own the Knicks. It's like, you got to go. I sit there and I go, Thibodeau changed this team. They had 12 coaches in the last 25 years before this. He brings a winning season, but they don't get the brass ring in the end. And Frank, he's got to go?
It's
What
absolutely
message does that send
outlandish.
about the next Knicks? What message does it send about who leads the team next, Frank?
I'd be very scared to take that job. That's all I can tell you. What it says is that the person who is getting ready to sit in this seat, I mean, the pressure is going to be amazing. I mean, it's just going to be way too much. But why would you want to work for that leadership? Why would you want to work on whatever the guy's name in the front office? Why would you want to work for them? I'm
Yeah.
not a Knicks fan, so you know what I mean. I watch because they were the hometown favorite, you know, in what's been going on, but this is bad leadership from the top.
You know what's so interesting is that I respect this again, not about basketball. Mary's more of a hockey person, and it's not really
And
about sports.
baseball, hockey and baseball, I like.
Yeah. But again, you want to know something? Joe Torre came in. When Joe Torre came in, the criticism was, who is this guy and what can he do? And he's also working, talk about a crazy leader or a leader, George Steinbrenner. That's a whole nother case study in leadership. But I'll say this. Joe Torre was a different kind of leader at a different time who handled his players a certain way, and the Yankees won. If he had done all those things and had love and respect with his players, but hadn't won all those championships, in the end, are you judged as a leader ultimately by whether you win the big one, or is it about the culture you create, or both? Complex stuff. Elvin says it's time to say goodbye. Hope you learned a lot and lessons in leadership. We'll see you next time.
This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Bucino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, Prager Metis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.